You are listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show, broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF-FM in Peterborough, Canada.
Hey, kids.
I'm Batman.
Look, up in the sky. It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's dance-off, bro. Me and you.
Hello, and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm your host, Dan Collins.
Hey there, this is Martin Bruda.
Chris Gill.
Hi, I'm Sam Tweedle. I could talk about Archie forever.
The biggest bane to my existence right now is Shield number 9.
They know that I would have put it under my shirt and ran off.
What are you talking about? I haven't seen any Action Comics number 1.
Gwenpool, I mean Spider-Gwen, the whole heat and stuff, this is going to be worth a few bucks. And nobody wanted it.
Yes, Dan, the Killing Joke does need to be R-rated.
I kind of like punching the walls of reality as a way to bring a character back because nobody knows what we're talking about right now.
Dark Knight Strikes Back was one of the biggest piles of dung ever, and it was what, $10 an issue?
We need to shame Sam. He is not here because he's gone to the Gem and the Holograms movie.
Hello and welcome to Hey Kids Comics. I'm Dan Collins.
Martin Bruda.
And I'm Sam Tweedle.
Friday night, comic books.
Friday night.
We should talk about comic books.
Friday night's all right for fighting. About comics.
There you go.
That's actually, we should put that in the show.
What?
Or in the new intro whenever we make
it.
One.
It is. It's a great tagline, isn't it?
Like that's what we do is we fight about comics.
Yeah. Or do we? Do we?
Sometimes.
Sometimes I feel like we get along. Sometimes we're on the same page. It's
page comic.
You know, it's kind of interesting when me and Marty are on the same page because usually our relationship's just about him telling me how wrong I am about everything and me just ignoring him.
That's because you're usually wrong about everything.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
There you go.
Fun times. Here we go.
There you go.
Here we go. So last night, if any of you were here in Peterborough and you went to the Doctor Who show at the Galaxy, you may have noticed the three of us there because we all hit up, what was it, Genesis of the Dalek?
Genesis of the Dalek.
Which,
yes.
I didn't realize, I guess it was shown all over Canada, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At various theaters across Canada, yeah.
And that was, you know what, I hadn't seen that in years. And I had a really good time. It was so cool watching
it. Why wouldn't it be shown all across Canada?
Well, when I first went in, I thought it was like something that the guy at the British shop had organized or something. I didn't realize.
Well, because I mean, he's already there, always there, the guy at the UK shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought
he's at all these things.
I didn't realize this was. I thought it was actually like Mick Color Me Naive, but I thought it was just our theater doing a fun thing.
It's funny because I don't go see movies with you guys.
Not
I only
often.
Go see Doctor Who things in the theater with you guys.
Why is that, Dan?
It's just the way it works out.
Huh.
I've seen Power of the Daleks, Genesis of the Daleks, and then a James Bond movie. I did see a James Bond
you
movie.
You did see a James Bond movie with us, yeah. But it was a lot of fun. Most memorable moment for me was just the last minute. I don't know if people have said, can you spoil something from 1974? Was it 74 or 75 that
I think it was 75 because Tom Baker was talking about becoming the Doctor in
74
like when it happened. So,
to put that in perspective, that was the year I was born, actually.
Okay.
Anyways, but the final scene of just this Dalek head screaming at the movie theater was goosebumpily epic.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I still maintain that they cut quite a bit out, like just the little things here and there, because I thought. As we were watching, there was an interview afterwards with Tom Baker, and they put some clips from different Tom Baker episodes in there, and there was Sarah Jane saying a part when he's holding the two wires as he has the chance to destroy the Daleks forever, and she says, if this was a disease, wouldn't you do it? I don't remember them having that in this part.
Isn't that interesting?
But I could have just been, like, zoning out a bit because I had to pee. So, I mean, I don't know.
You know, I was thinking about that, though, and that is this cheap thing, like, where, you know, the Doctor's about to kill all the Daleks, and he's like, maybe I shouldn't do it. And then they get interrupted, and then they leave, and then he goes and he does try to do it later on. And I'm just thinking, man, you had your chance.
But they
you
didn't
should have
get,
done it.
They didn't get interrupted. They thought there was a different way.
Okay.
Because somebody was like, we've stopped Davros. And
right.
He's like, oh, good, I don't need to commit genocide.
Right, but then doesn't he go back and he tries to
And then he blows them up, but then he's like, this will only stop them for 1,000 years.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that part because I was falling asleep or something. But
now, the reason I
did doze off a few times, but...
I didn't doze off at all. I did remember less of it than I thought I did. Because this is one of my favorite Tom Baker serials, and I've seen it 5 times, but just, like, not for the past 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I forgot completely, like, the beginning, the Time Lords are the ones that send him there and stuff. Like, I was just like, oh, man, you think you're a Doctor Who fan, and you forgot all this.
You know, it was great to see Tom Baker rated at his prime again. You know, where he was doing his best work, because we talked a little bit about it afterwards. I mean, he did it for 6 years. And there was definitely an ebb and flow. Like, I found his first season to be a little shaky in the first couple of... First while he was trying to get his feet wet.
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, he just did his best stuff. Now, I've never seen the Key to Time season, which everybody says is supposed to be a masterpiece.
It's okay.
I own it. I haven't seen it yet. I will. I've always been good on the Leela stuff. I love his final season, but... you know, but that right there, Genesis Daleks, was when Tom Baker was doing his best stuff.
I was doing math just now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The movie we saw was 90 minutes.
Okay.
It is indeed 6 episodes. Each episode, 25 minutes each. So that's 150 minutes.
So that's a huge discrepancy.
There's an hour missing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, like we said at the theater, you know, there's the episode recaps and summaries and all that stuff. So maybe some of that, but... that's an hour of missing content.
Yeah, so they streamlined this down.
Okay.
Yeah, I wonder.
To make it an hour and a half movie.
And because, like, when it was over, I was like, already? Because, like, having seen the original so many times, I was watching for the parts where they would break the episodes up. Yeah. And, you know, I would see them and be like, oh, okay, so we're on, like, this is episode 5. And I'm like, oh, it's been that long already. This is episode 6. And then it's over. And I looked at my phone. And I was like, whoa, it's only, like, it's 8:40. And we got in here at 7:10, so
they cut an hour of stuff out.
Let's call it a recut.
Well, they're calling it a director's cut, which I don't understand, because was there a director actually involved? Like, is this actually the director of that episode editing it, or is this just a director's
using the
cut?
Term director cut?
Cut, oh.
Yeah,
it makes me interested to go back and rewatch the whole thing again.
Yeah,
you know,
and you can. Yeah, and you can rewatch it on Blu-ray in 2 weeks.
Yep. Or I could just go into my bedroom and pull up the DVD that I already have.
For some reason, it completely, like, slipped my mind until we were in the theater. But, like, they're releasing Tom Baker's first season on Blu-ray. It's the first season to ever be released on Blu-ray of classic Doctors. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How much is that going to cost?
It's $60 on Amazon right now.
Okay,
and $70 if you want to buy it local. Mm-hmm. So
it makes sense to me that they would start with Tom Baker's first season to do on Blu-ray for the Classic Who. It makes complete sense. It's not my favorite season. You know what I mean? But maybe that's just me being me.
It's one of my favorite seasons. And the only thing that I like the next season as well, because the next season goes a little like gothic horror.
Yeah.
With, like, I think it's Seeds of Doom.
Brains of Morbius.
Yes. That is some of the best Doctor Who light horror until the new series with, like, some of Stephen Moffat's episodes were a little spooky, you know?
Yeah.
But I definitely went home and watched some Doctor Who last night.
Oh, what did you watch last night?
Well, I wanted to watch some more Tom Baker, but I didn't because I didn't have time. And also, half of my collection's in one spot and half of my collection's in another spot. And so I just pulled out one of Peter Capaldi's. I had been slowly rewatching Peter Capaldi and watched the Mummy on the Orient Express episode.
Good. That's a good one.
And yes. Yeah.
I had to break up my collection too for a room. So half my collection is in my living room and the other half of the collection is in my bedroom.
Yeah.
But I still could pretty much get to all of them. But I'm tempted to. I really want to watch the one that I left wanting to watch again was The Talons of I Ching.
Yeah,
I liked it with the giant rats in the sewers. I haven't seen that one in a long time.
And, I haven't, that's one that I've only watched once.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of Tom Baker's stuff from from his second season on, I've only watched once.
Mm. Now, we were talking a long time ago, and have you said you've never watched his final season?
I have not made it there yet.
It's very...
Being able to watch it from this far away from when it aired, you know, I bought it. I had the whole thing, and then I was just started watching bits and pieces, and then I was like, no, I'm going to start from the beginning of his era and watch, and so that's what I did. And then, of course, something distracted me, and I never got through to the end.
His second last season is so vilely terrible, but there's a bit of a shift in his final season, and again, I think... But you know what? Part of me is just sentimental, maybe, too, because that's when I started watching it as a kid. I started watching it with Tom Baker's second final season was when I discovered Doctor Who. But it was really his final season that just sort of captured me. And then when he transformed into Peter Davison, my mind was blown and I was full in. But I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was good stuff. So
it was a good time.
Move away. Anyways, I did something great on the weekend. I went to the comic store for the first time in 6 weeks. I went to both comic stores I go to. I dropped, I didn't buy everything I had, but I dropped a huge sum of money and got more than half of it. So I've actually been reading comics all week long.
That's good.
Catching up on my books, falling back in love with the, industry. And I've read quite a few number ones and quite a few final issues and, quite a few books in the middle, and it's crazy because what I thought I do is it seems in the last 6 weeks I sort of became indifferent to comics. Like, I wasn't buying them, I wasn't reading them, and I started thinking to myself, you know, I could probably just quit this crazy hobby if I wanted.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're faced with 45 comics looking you in the face, and you start reading and you're like, oh, I love this stuff. This stuff's so good.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out books to... I'm looking to streamline my collection. I'm looking to drop books from my pull list. And I'm just not finding any because it seems every single book I read, I'm back in. Like, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I brought some. Do you guys want to hear about them?
Yeah.
All right. All right. So I've actually brought this...
Take your time, though, because I haven't read any comics. All right.
What I did is I actually brought this into two. I have first issues and final issues, and wanted to talk about a few. First, some great. I got a lot of number ones. Some stuff I haven't read yet. Some stuff I have. But I brought a few number ones in here. The first one is A Walk Through Hell, which is Garth Ennis's brand new book from Aftershock Comics.
He's got another book out.
He has another book. Yeah. And it's just a setup issue, but as a setup issue went, it just made me want so much more. And the first part of the issue really seems to just be more, I don't know how connected it is to the story to come, but it just seemed Garth Ennis's excuse to talk about his view on America's love with firearms and lack of gun control and his opinions on that, as well as make some shots at his opinions on the Trump administration. Well, when you get to the end, basically what it is, there's a warehouse. Something has happened in this warehouse that's just crazy. And these two FBI agents get called in, and basically 8 cops went in, and then they all came out, and they're almost catatonic. And nobody knows what happened in there. Well, as the two FBI agents enter the warehouse, the 8 cops commit mass suicide where they all pull out their guns and kill each other. So it leaves you at the end going, oh my God, like, what are these two FBI agents walking into? What's in the warehouse? Where are they going with this? I wouldn't say the book had a ton of substance, but it was an amazing, almost like an epilogue, not an epilogue, a prelude to the opposite of epilogue.
Yeah.
A prelude to a bigger story. And definitely, I think, one of the better things I read this week.
Did they have to make the two FBI agents look exactly like Mulder and Scully?
You noticed that too, didn't you?
I'm sure it was on purpose then.
I got another new book. Actually, I got the first 2 issues. And so it must have came right out like the last week I was there. It's by Image Comics. It's called Death or Glory. And it's by I recognize his last name. I was trying to see if I could find his first name in here, but you guys know stuff. Remender. Remender? Remender?
Rick.
Yeah, okay. Rick, yeah. Thank you. So anyways, he's writing this book. It's called Death or Glory. And it is about this woman, and her name's Glory, and she was abandoned by her mother and raised by truckers and bikers.
Okay.
Okay, so she's really part of this kind of trucker-biker subculture. And the one trucker that helped raise her is this guy named Red. Now Red has he's dying of cancer. And because of the American healthcare system being the nightmare it is,
yeah,
she can't afford – they can't afford treatments. So she basically is going out on this one-woman crime spree to get the money for his treatments. And it's called Death or Glory. And what I love about this book is it just has a lot of heart. It has, you know, characters that you like, but they're a little on, you know, they're definitely on, like, on the edge of society. But they're, you like them immediately, and it just has tons and tons of heart. Action, you know, and it's a nice little crime, you know, crime book, but anti-hero stuff, right?
And yeah. She's got a nice butt.
Okay, well, there's that too. But I was more thinking about the heart. All right, another number one book.
There's a lot of heart in this bathtub scene.
Yeah, anyway. Thank. You know what? That would be fun is Marty and Sam reads comics together.
Gratuitous sex and violence for no reason.
Anyway. Another one I picked up, another number one book, and I had to talk about this. This is the latest classic Archie book. It's Betty and Veronica, Friends Forever, number one. And
drawn by Adam Hughes?
No, it is drawn by Dan Parent, because he actually knows how to finish the art chores on a book. The stories are written by a guy named Bill Gulher, and what's basically going on, this is... A little while ago, they did that Betty. They did the Archie and Me with Dan Parent and Ty Templeton, where Dan sort of redesigned the classic Archie look.
Yeah,
which it was okay. Like some of the designs, like the I didn't like the Jughead design. They gave him like a little goatee and these big bangs, and the redesign for Reggie was just awful. I mean, he looked like Black Adam for some reason to me.
Okay.
But, anyways, they've now scrapped that completely, and now they're back to the classic Dan Parent doing the Dan DiCarlo type art. Love seeing the return of that. Great. My only problem with Benny Veronica Friends Forever is that it's three stories in a small book. It really just sticks to Archie, Betty, and Veronica, so there's no expanded universe type characters in it. And actually, the stories by Bill Gulher are actually pretty vapid and substanceless. I'd really like the old days before they did the reboot Archie, where there, even though it was funny, there was a little bit of continuity and storytelling. And I'd love to see this continue, but I really hope that they create something just with a little bit of more meat to it.
It's funny because I was listening to what you're saying, but I'm scrolling through some news to talk about, and then I heard you say something negative about Archie, and immediately my attention was like, "Whoa, what just happened? What just happened here?"
He says lots of negative things about Archie.
Not about anything, not about stuff that's got Dan Parent on it.
Yeah, well, it's
usually
not
you're complaining about the art. Like well, with the other
I love
styles,
the
yeah.
The thing that Archie Comics needs to do is let Dan Parent write the stories. Because when Dan Parent does double duty, art and story, I mean, he's a very funny guy. He writes really amusing stories. He understands these characters because, hell, he's created half of them.
Look, it's just like Geoff Johns getting to write books for DC, right? Flash Rebirth and Green Lantern Rebirth. You put a guy in there who understands the history of the characters, understands the history of the publications, and has a passion for the characters, and all of a sudden, boom, you got these bestseller comic books. Same thing with Dan Parent. I mean, there's very few people that would be better qualified to reboot Archie Comics, and yet they're not tapping into that resource that's sitting right there.
All they let him do is draw it.
Oh, it's
silly. You know, they need to start letting... When I consider my classic... What really got me into Archie Comics was when Dan was doing the writing, the majority of the writing stories, and he was creating this huge universe with, as I said, with continuity, he was writing stories that did take risks, and everything interconnected. It was like literally like reading Marvel or Marvel or DC Comics, where with total continuity and a giant cast of characters.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they decided it wasn't selling. But is it selling again? I don't know. This is out. It's so good to see this art and these types of stories in this kind of Archie book.
Yeah, but you're saying that it's a bad book, though. Like, it's great art, but the stories are horrible. So somebody's going to be like, oh, this was dumb. I'm not getting issue two. And somebody at Archie's going to go, see, the classic art doesn't sell.
See, that's a problem, isn't it?
No, it's dumb. You just get somebody who understands the property and to do it.
And they have that guy on this
he's
book.
He's sitting right there. He's complete. And there's no doubt that Dan would be completely willing to take on the project.
Yeah, well, and Dan Parent's pretty much like the would be one of the biggest Archie celebrities that they have, you know, like recognizable names on the product, right?
Oh, it's
you made the Jeff Johns connection. He is Jeff Johns of
he is the Jeff Johns of Archie Comics, and he should be doing exactly what they let Jeff Johns do.
He is the Bendis of Marvel.
Yeah, exactly.
Or DC
of Archie
or wherever he is.
Like the rebirth. That was totally Jeff Johns guiding that ship back from the New 52 disaster. Do the same thing with Archie. Tap Dan Parent. Get Dan Parent to like call some of his friends like Fernando Ruiz to get back in here. Do some great art. Giselle Lugosi.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And just knock this shit out of the park with classic, good old American values, small town Archie.
Oh my God,
stories.
Are we agreeing on something?
Well, we both agree that Archie Publications right now is a cluster.
Yes.
And
to be fair,
directionless. And,
oh yeah.
And you remember a long time ago when Riverdale was first coming out, you were like, Archie is banking all of their financial success on Riverdale and if Riverdale fails, and well, unfortunately Riverdale's popular.
It is. Yes.
So they've got the finances, they've got the resources. So somebody out there is sitting there going, "Haha, see? Ha 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 ha. We were right. Your books aren't selling." Your books just aren't selling. They're not even coming out. Like, let's be honest here. Where is the Betty and Veronica from Adam Hughes?
Well, it was canceled after three issues because he couldn't pop it out in time.
Exactly. Like, where's all the other stuff that's been announced? Where's all the other books that were supposed to be happening?
They do come out, but in drips and drabs.
Well, that's not coming out.
Or they're canceled after six issues.
That's not coming out.
The Mark Waid's Archie, regular Archie title, which the writing's always been pretty solid on that. It's not my style of storytelling.
The art was pretty bad for a while.
Art's questionable. The type of story is like it's not funny stuff. It's pretty dramatic, but I still like the Waid stuff, and it comes out pretty regular. But if it ended, it wouldn't hurt my feelings. So
it's just not. And all I know is if I ran my business the way that Archie runs their business, I'd be broke. I'd be bankrupt.
So moving on. But thank you for that, Marty. I really actually feel that we've bonded.
There you go.
Now, I know Marty read this. Dan, I don't think you did. The Further Adventures of Nick Wilson.
I didn't read all of it. This is the final issue.
That's the final issue because it was a miniseries, right?
I feel like I should go get the issues I'm missing.
Oh, my God. I got to tell you, I don't know if this book was a big seller or not, but every single issue of this book was a gem. Just a hidden gem. Once after the other. And it looks like at the end of this that they are going to be bringing it back for a second story arc. But this is what really surprised me about this. And I mean, I finished this series wanting more. But at the back of the book, there was all these people endorsing the book, you know, where they have like quotes, right? And check this out. Oh, wait, this isn't the final issue here. This is number four. I guess I forgot the final issue at home. But there was people like Penn and Teller and Paul Dini and... Brian Michael Bendis and all these people talking about how much they love, and then some people that weren't even comic guys, like I said, Penn and Teller. I'm trying to think of some of the other like Hollywood types talking about their love for the Nick Wilson book. And I don't know if it did well or not, but man, anybody out there that didn't pick up this book, moment it comes out on trade, which should be in the next few months, you got to pick this book up. It is just my God, it's just so good. It's so real world. It's basically takes place in our universe. It's about a guy who had superpowers for about a year and then lost them. And now years go by and he's just a schmo, and his arch nemesis has this great idea. Why don't we create a Nick Wilson museum and get back into the business? And about, you know, how does a guy that had power superpowers for a year deal with not having superpowers anymore? And it's just, again, a lot of heart. Characters that you like, characters you don't like, but just very, very real stories about a very improbable type of story. So, yeah. And I brought another book, but I'm going to skip that. I did want to make one mention. I was at CBA on Sunday, and I noticed that they had the first issue of the Snagglepuss Chronicles, which is now done, on their Hot Comics thing. Apparently, I was talking to someone, apparently because nobody bought it when it came out, it is now, because it was so good and so many people were talking it up, it's now become considered a hot book because people now want it.
Is that the one you didn't get?
No, I got it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I have it. I loved every issue of it.
Because I thought there was one that they didn't give you that you had to chase after.
That was Lockjaw. That was Lockjaw, which is not a hot book. nobody bought that except me. What was interesting about Snagglepuss, apparently, Victoria was telling me at CBA, is that when that book came out, only two people at CBA ordered it, which was me and Alex, who works at the store. And that was it. And apparently now, all of a sudden, because it's been so highly acclaimed, like they're selling it, the first issue at CBA now, for $30. So, and it's continuing to climb. So, again, that trade paperback has just been solicited in the latest previews. And anybody who really wants to do some, read some really great, interesting stuff, Snagglepuss Chronicles. So that's my new comic rant. Did I take up half the show? I'm so sorry, guys.
That's all right.
All right. Cool.
Wait, we did, it was 15 minutes Doctor Who, 15 minutes Sam.
There okay. You I read comics. Schedule.
What'd you read?
I read comics.
Tell us about the comics you read, Marty.
Pestilence, A Story of Satan, number one. This is the second story arc. I kind of like the way, I kind of criticized Marvel for doing this-ish, but not really-ish. Aftershock's doing the same thing that Dark Horse does. Here's a 4-issue series, here's a 6-issue series, and it ends and you're done. Great. You really like that? Fine. A few months later, the creative team gets back together. Here's the next chapter, right? Another 4 issues, 6 issues. And that way, there's always a convenient jumping on point. You know that you're going to get your 4 issues in 4 months. You're not worried about, you know, doomsday clocking it and having a 1-year series turning into a 2.5-year series. So that's what they're doing here is it's the second arc, new number one, Pestilence, A Story of Satan, number one. And basically what it is if you haven't read the first arc, is the Black Plague was not the bubonic plague. The Black Plague was a zombie infestation, and the church has these holy warriors and stuff, and they're trying to fight this zombie apocalypse. So it's popes and zombies. How can you go wrong?
Wow. That sounds like the Catholic Church now.
Yeah. Did you read the first arc?
I didn't read the first arc. That's one. I buy a lot of Aftershock. But for whatever reason, that was one that I missed.
Now, one thing about the first series, and I have to look because I can't remember names very well, and I'm not sure if it's the same artist or not, but the first arc was drawn by a guy who does art for Disney.
Oh, yeah.
So the book literally looked like it was drawn by the guy who drew Aladdin and the guy who drew, you know, Pocahontas and Hunchback of Notre Dame and all those kind of comics. It really, really, really looks kind of Disney animated-ish. Hmm. Really nice, really great art. And the art in this is equally as good, and I'm just not 100% sure whether it's the same guy or not. But there's a lot of cuss words in this book. And somebody online was complaining because, you know, oh, it's not, you know, the truth, the true word of God and who Satan actually was and stuff like this. I'm just like,
comics.
It's comics. Relax. Unwind.
Was it the guys that was outside of the Comic Con?
No, it's some guy from the U.S. Bible Belt was just having an orangutan attack because here's a biblical story that isn't based in reality. And I was just like,
I don't know. Maybe you should go get some Spire comics and shut up.
The Bible's not based in reality.
Anyways, so that was a really good book. Man of Steel, the introductory miniseries from Brian Michael Bendis. I am not the biggest Superman fan. I am a huge DC Comics fan. Superman just never really resonated with me. Kurt Swan is the worst artist who stayed far too long. His 1950s style dragging into the 70s was horrible. And I don't care how many of you geezers out there are like, Kurt Swan is the greatest Superman artist in the planet. You're wrong. You're just plain wrong. I mean, you're looking at Neil Adams' Batman and stuff, and then all of a sudden, Kurt Swan Superman in the early 80s. It's like, what are you doing? Retire.
Was Kurt Swan still drawing him in the 80s?
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh.
I think
all
of
into
more
the late 70s.
Really? I think of him more as like a late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah, but he kept drawing. He drew him almost all through the 70s.
No kidding.
Yeah. I think Jose Garcia Lopez, who is amazing.
Oh my God. I wish that every comic that would be put out would be drawn like he draws
it.
I'm tired of this
artsy fartsy style.
Yeah, where you got to find your own unique thing. Just draw it like Lopez.
So I was never, like I said, I was never a huge Superman fan. I mean, I read some Superman books, and I was really big on World's Finest because it had Batman and Superman, and they had, like, the Super Sons. Mm-hmm. I really liked those arcs and stuff. Anyways, so New 52 Rebirth comes out. New 52 Superman comes out, and it's okay-ish, but I didn't like it. You know, he's in blue jeans and shit, so I missed that. Rebirth Superman comes out. Blows my mind away. Like, It is apple pie and truth, justice in the American way, and Superman being heroic and, you know, standing up for the little guy. There's this one issue where they go on a picnic to look at various. They're traveling across the U.S. and they're going on a picnic to various locations to kind of give John Kent a little bit of history, Superman's son, and they come across an old Civil War battlefield. So they literally have this picnic there. They come across a family that's celebrating one of their relatives that died on this battlefield, but the body was never recovered. And of course, you know, Lois Lane is just like, all right, Clark, go find him. So Clark's like using his X-ray vision all over the place, finds the corpse of this Civil War soldier and brings the body back to the family. Tears rolling down my face, you know, it's just a heartfelt, amazing issue.
Nothing says family, warm family as digging up a Civil War corpse.
Here's your 300-year-old body. But, you know, it's just that kind of, you know, hoorah, rah, and epic, stereotypical Superman. Like, if you thought about Superman, Rebirth Superman is exactly who you thought about. So I was digging it. One of my best comics I was reading. Loved every issue. All of a sudden, His Majesty Brian Michael Bendis III is being announced as coming in and taking over everything. And I have these horrible visions of when I used to read Captain America. And it was Ron Garvey was drawing it, and I think Mark Waid was writing, but I'm not sure. I know Mark Waid and Ron Garvey teamed up afterwards. Mm-hmm. Great run of Captain America. The book is picking up sales, and they're like, oh, yeah. We gave Captain America to Rob Liefeld for a year, so you guys are out of jobs. And boom, the storyline ends and all that momentum. And I'm like, oh, Bendis is coming. He's going to screw everything up. So Bendis comes in, Man of Steel, weekly miniseries, just like the old John Byrne Man of Steel, introducing Superman. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty good. Same thing. Superman's flying into burning buildings, saving people, being all heroic. They're introducing some new characters, not really changing too much. I know Gilpin would like say, oh, no, they're changing the entire history and origin of Superman, but not really. There's an introduction of a new bad guy that could possibly have been responsible for Krypton exploding. But they didn't really change the fact that Krypton exploded, so I don't think it's a huge change. But I know Chris thinks it's massive and Bendis screwing things up, but he's anti-Bendis anyway, so. But they're into issue 3 already because, like I said, every 3 weeks, and we didn't do a show last week. I kind of like it. I really do. I'm looking forward to Superman number 1 from Brian Michael Bendis.
Awesome. That's great.
Should be good. Mm-hmm. On top of that, Justice League number 1 came out last week.
Okay.
2 weeks ago. And this is the reboot of the Justice League comic book after, what was it called, No Justice? And again, you know,
the Justice League comic from Rebirth didn't really resonate with me. It was a poor excuse to kind of make a mini event book within books. There was always some kind of global threat, and the guys and gals from the Justice League all had to face this global threat, and they did their little thing, and they defeated them, and then the next global threat. Well, it was so bad, I can't even remember the name of any of the global threats that they fought. Like, it was just unmemorable. So they're rebooting Justice League number one. Spoilers for anybody who doesn't read this. Martian Manhunter is now the chairman of the board for Justice League. He's in charge. He psychically links all the team members together and acts as their communication system.
What does that sound like?
I don't know. A lot of thinking like this.
I don't know. They're both bald. One's in a wheelchair, I guess. But well, anyway.
Yeah, anyways.
Anyway.
It's actually funny you're making that parallel. I'll get to that in a sec. And they have like a virtual Sonic boardroom where they all meet. And this is all part of the whole big, huge Justice League out of the Halls of Justice. And it's going to be, there's a multitude. It's almost like FBI headquarters. It's Justice League Odyssey, Justice League Dark, New Teen Titans, Titans, Batman and the Outsiders, and Justice League all fight out of this, all work out of this Hall of Justice. So the comic comes out. I'm reading it. It reads like an Avengers comic.
Hmm.
Like the last couple of Avengers series that they had. Again, there's a big, huge global threat that's not memorable. But it's more, that was more a background story to the actual setting up of the new status quo. So I kind of liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be buying that. Well, I'm not going to be buying it. It's on my pull list. So I'm getting that for sure. And what else did I read that you're interested in? Plastic Man, number one.
Yeah, I got that on my pull list, but I haven't picked it up yet.
You didn't buy it. Why?
Well, you can talk.
How can we talk about it?
Because I'm not going to get upset about spoilers because I don't care about that crap.
Okay.
So
Plastic Man, number one, 6-issue miniseries.
Gail Simone's writing it?
Yeah, Gail Simone is writing it. And I'm trying to remember who the artist is here. Adriana Milo, who I don't know, but, you know, Kelly Fitzpatrick. A lot of ladies involved here, which is kind of cool. Amanda Connor does variant cover. Christy Quinn is the editor. So this is like a pretty female-driven comic. It's great. It's fantastic.
I'm not a big Plaz fan. I'm more of an Elongated Man nut.
Yeah,
but what I thought was really interesting is if anybody remembers the short-lived Plastic Man cartoon series from the late 70s, early 80s?
Yeah.
He had like this girlfriend who he eventually married and they had a plastic baby.
Yeah.
The girlfriend, I don't remember her name, but well, she was out of continuity. Like, she was never part of the book. Aren't they bringing her in?
They name her series? In the first issue, but not really. Like, it's going to be evolving. The relationship between him and her, I think, is going to happen during this miniseries. She doesn't play a big part at all whatsoever in the first issue.
I can't remember the name of the character, but I thought that's why I'm buying it, because of that nostalgia for that short-lived Plastic Man book.
Yeah, I don't know. What was her name? Trish?
I don't know.
Tanya? I have no idea.
I don't remember, but...
But this basically starts off with Plastic Man... Doris? Was that her name? Doris?
I don't remember. I barely remember the cartoon series.
If her name isn't Doris, then this isn't the chick.
Okay.
Because she's here
but
in the
they,
comic
they
Doris.
Draw her like the cartoon...
Wow,
like,
I can picture draw her like a blonde.
I can picture the cartoon character, but as I said, I can't remember... The cartoon version of Plastic Man.
But this is really a reintroduction of the character into the mythos, and if you don't know nothing about Plastic Man, you can pick this up and it'll be pretty good. And hopefully it comes out all 6 issues in 6 months, and I won't be mad that I didn't wait for the trade paperback like I am about everything else DC publishes. But it was really good too.
All right.
So that's what I read. Anybody else?
I read the newest season of Northgard.
Oh, ooh, yeah.
Nice.
Hey.
It was pretty good.
Did you get that
digitally?
All the episodes were out?
Yeah, I think.
Do I have... How many came out physically?
I think the first two are out physically.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure.
Because I did not buy into the digital
stuff from Chapter House, so I know I'm behind on some issues.
Yeah, I think issue 4 came out last week or the week before.
Yeah, I'll have to reread it all once it comes out, because I know I've read the issues that physically came out, but I can't remember anything about them.
You were bringing up Aftershock, and remember I said I had another book that I wasn't going to talk about, but I just figured I would, now that you brought it up. You know how you're talking about how Aftershock does that thing where they do a six-issue arc, then they do a second six-issue arc? Well, one of the books that I've consistently liked from Aftershock is Rough Riders, which is sort of Aftershock's... it's written by Adam Glass, who is a writer I really like. Adam Glass was a showrunner for Supernaturals for a long time, and he was the guy who did the Suicide Squad, New 52 Suicide Squad, who brought Harley Quinn into the Suicide Squad mythos, established the Harley Quinn that I guess they use now, and also was the basis for the movie. I really liked his Suicide Squad, although I wasn't always sold. I didn't like the way... Adam Glass did this thing where he was writing his own characters and he was just sticking classic names on them. He didn't care who they were or what they were. Anyways, he's been doing this Rough Riders, which is kind of his versions of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but with characters from American...
Yeah.
American pop culture or history. So it's Teddy Roosevelt, Einstein, Annie Oakley, Houdini, and Jack Johnson, the boxer. In the latest issue, he also brought in H.P. Lovecraft, which was very cool. Well, the final issue of the third arc came out, which was supposed to be the final arc, because I'm going to give some spoilers. I'm just going to do it.
Do it.
What's so interesting and got me so excited, like, I heard this was going to be the final Rough Rider storyline. In the final pages, he reveals that there's actually going to be a fourth series, but he's retiring these characters because he's gotten to the point in their history now where I think in the latest series, like, they establish, like, that Houdini's going to die.
Yeah.
Like, he meets the Grim Reaper, and the Grim Reaper in this weird, it makes sense if you read it kind of way. And he actually saves the soul of Jack Johnson, who he's best friends with in the series.
Yeah.
By setting up his own demise. You know what I mean? Like, and so, you know, Houdini's going to die. And it's just getting to the point where these characters...
Like, they've reached the end of their
character. They've reached the end of their stories.
Lives.
Exactly.
In real life.
So they establish that they're actually doing a new Rough Rider series where it's the daughter of Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And they reveal in the final panel who the new Rough Riders are going to be.
That's cool.
And I couldn't recognize almost any of them. For the exception of Albert Einstein. And it's going to be taking place during World War II. So I'm really excited about I have loved all three Rough Riders series. They have been great pulp fantasy. They use a lot of inventions and gadgets and stuff like that. I'm sorry, Marty. I actually brought the wrong issue. I thought I was bringing the last issue. I brought the second last issue. So I couldn't recognize. They showed the pictures, and I'm like, well, I recognize Roosevelt, but not Roosevelt, Einstein. But I'm so excited to see what happens next and with the new lineup. It's just solidly been a lot of fun. Like, it's a lot of steampunk stuff. So they're making, like, and they throw in horror and science fiction, and the stories are absolutely ridiculous. Like, and some of the villains, like, there's this part where they're in Cuba, fighting in Cuba, and all of a sudden Rasputin shows up, and he's the villain. And it's like, what? What's Rasputin doing in Cuba? Like, Rasputin never got out of Russia ever, you know? And then I will not reveal who the villain of the surprise villain of the second series was, even though it's been months now. It was so absolutely over-the-top insane, yet hilarious and clever all at the same time.
Yeah.
But so Rough Riders is going to ride again into the 1940s.
Well, so. And with the premise that he's got, he can keep going, right?
Yeah.
He could just change it. I like the series. I didn't get all of the second and third series, but the first series was fantastic.
I think the third one's my favorite. The second one was a lot of fun, but the third one with H.P. Lovecraft, I think I liked it because it went into the horror vein.
Yeah.
So there were zombies, and there was the afterlife, and the relationship that Adam Glass created between some of the relationships he created, the relationship between Annie Oakley and Roosevelt's really nice, where Annie Oakley's almost like Roosevelt becomes a father figure. Edison's very much the anti-hero. He's a son of a bitch that everybody hates. And then Jack Johnson and Harry Houdini become like best friends. And, you know, it's like this small little scrappy magician and this giant bulky, you know, black boxer. And, you know, it's just it's been such a fun series. So I'm interested to see where they go into it. So
Sam,
Wendy, what is this?
Sam, did you even look at
it? I did look at this. I saw something about this today. I was at work all day, so I couldn't see. I see a lot of cats, which is very exciting. What is this?
Okay, so two guys that were involved with Vertigo when Vertigo first started doing things.
When it was good?
Like when they first started out. I'm trying to remember who exactly it is. Tom Payer is one of them. And I can't remember who the other fellow is, and I don't have the article in front of me because I'm dumb and I should have looked it up. But basically, they're starting their own comic book imprint called Ahoy Comics. And they're going to be publishing comics in the magazine format. 40-page magazine for $3.99. And one of the comics they're doing is, what was it called, Captain Midnight?
As in, like, Captain Midnight was an old radio TV
broadcast. What was it called? I don't know. I just showed it to you. You're supposed to remember.
Oh, no,
better.
That was
Captain Ginger.
Captain Ginger, yeah.
So basically, this is a sci-fi comic book about interstellar travel type stuff by what do they call it? Anamorphic cats? Cats that are semi-human and wear semi-clothes. But they're also surrounded by regular cats. So this is like Pluto and Goofy.
My God. You know what? Like, I'm sorry, but that planet is the planet I want to live on.
There you go. So it's coming out October, I think it is. A bunch of I'm not sure if Captain Ginger's coming out in October, but the first two issues from Ahoy Comics will be out there. But I just thought it was interesting that they're coming out magazine size, 40 pages for $3.99.
So is that kind of like a throwback to stuff like the Marvel used to do books like that?
Well, yeah, Marvel used to do their black and white magazines all the time, and Warner did some, and Atlas Seaboard did some.
It had Eerie and
Eerie and Savage Sword of
Conan.
But they were black and white and stuff. But if these guys can manage to get into the magazine distribution network and they're magazine sized and it's 40 pages for $3.99, not 20 pages of story and a whole bunch of house ads for $3.99. This might be a thing that takes off a little bit in the supermarkets, in the bookstores, in the magazine racks.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see again.
So it'd be nice to see if this this will be a successful thing. I just thought it was interesting.
What was the Kung Fu one that Marvel used to do?
Oh, I can't remember. Deadly Hands of Kung Fu?
Deadly Hands of Kung Fu. I think that's the only magazine-sized book I have in my entire collection because I was able to find the one. They actually had a Billy Jack cover.
Yep.
Although there was not a Billy Jack comic inside, it was just an article on Billy Jack.
There you go.
So I do have that somewhere. I don't know where it is.
My cousin Mark, he's a real estate agent, and one of the houses that he was cleaning out, he found a bunch of Savage Sword of Conan.
Mm-hmm.
So he gave them to me, and I rebagged and bored them into magazine-sized bags. I bought a magazine-sized box and put them on Kijiji and all this stuff. Nobody wanted them. Nobody. So, Mark, if you ever watch comics, they're sitting on top of my filing cabinet. You can have them back. But
well, you met my friend Vern Pickford. You had a good visit with him
for a few minutes, yeah.
The Comic-Con. Those are the only comics he will buy, is the magazine size stuff. Like, he'll buy that, but he won't buy this kind of stuff, eh? But that's kind of his era. You know, wasn't there a Hulk one?
Yeah, there was a Hulk one for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
I used to read the Savage Sword of Conan all the time.
Man-Thing made his debut in one of those.
I think so.
Yeah, there was a horror one that
Star-Lord did.
Okay, yeah.
Can't remember who else. Somebody else did.
Yeah.
Vampirella did.
Oh yeah, she had her own book magazine for quite a long time. Yeah.
So I don't know. It'll be interesting. I mean, on the magazine racks right now, you got cartoons. That's back with That's back on the racks. Some of the Marvel Disney stuff for kids, like they come out with like a Spider-Man Adventures or something like that. That's on the magazine rack. So I just thought it was interesting that they're going to try this other size.
I think that's great. I mean, you know, and obviously they must have a certain nostalgia too for those magazines.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And being ex Vertigo guys from the beginning of Vertigo, it might be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw the one cat cover and I knew you'd freak out.
Yeah, yeah, I'm totally buying that. That's going to be a thing, you know. You know, there was a planet of cats, though. I don't know if it would succeed very long because they'd just be knocking stuff off tables. Just randomly.
There wouldn't be tables.
No, why wouldn't
tables would be beds.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting, but you're right. They would be beds or chairs.
And wall-to-wall carpet would have a new definition.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
So last week, I was away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sudbury,
you went to Sudbury
Graphic Con in Sudbury.
How was it?
It was pretty good.
Tell us about it.
It was a not nearly the same drive as going up to the Timmins one. It was a few hours shorter, but a nice drive. Beautiful, beautiful country, Sudbury. Like sparkling lakes and like amazing like mountainous stuff. I was really impressed.
Oh, it's beautiful. I've driven up there many times. My family's from Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah.
So we would have to drive through Sudbury to get to Sault Ste. Marie, like at least twice a year.
And so the show was pretty good. It wasn't as busy as like the Timmins show, but there was a lot of people there. Like Davis and Andrew from Oric were there.
Mm-hmm.
I was tabling with Daryl Joseph, and he was selling Penny Steel. And
which you didn't bring any copies of back.
Well, you know what, guys? You can always text me to remind me. After a 6-7 hour drive, the brain is fried.
Did you go see the Big Nickel?
I did not. I know you hate me.
What?
I didn't have time.
But
I got in, went to bed, got up, went to the convention. The convention actually ran from 10 to 7. That was a long
convention.
That's
a long convention, yeah. Both days?
It was just the one day, and then I went home.
And you didn't see the Nickel?
I didn't see the Nickel.
Look, you just got to drive by.
I don't even know where it was.
It's in Sudbury.
Well, I know.
And it's big. It's huge. You can barely miss it.
You can't miss it.
You literally can because I did. I was like, I hope this thing's like the CN Tower, and I can just see it as I'm coming into town, and then I'll be able to know where it is. And no. It's not big enough to just see from the road that I was driving on.
I'm sure you could have GPS'd it.
I could have, but I didn't. Maybe next year. So, anyways,
oh, I hope so.
So if anybody else out there from the CCBA loves me, I'm missing Big Nick and I'm missing Penny Steel.
Big Nick, yeah, the guys from Big Nick were there, Mart and Kevin and Nicholas.
Now, is Big Nick based in Sudbury?
Yes.
And does it involve a big nickel?
Yeah,
it does.
It's his shield. His shield is a nickel.
For the love of God, Dan.
And I got my picture taken with Big Nick.
Oh, but not the Big Nickel.
Big Nick cosplay.
Yeah, that was kind of cool, eh?
Yeah.
Big Nick cosplay, and we saw a pitiful human
lizard cosplay.
Lizard cosplay.
That was cool. That was cool.
I spoilers, that was Jason Liu cosplaying as his own character. And so I start talking to him as he's dressed up like PHL, and he's not responding to me. And he's like, I don't, what are you talking about? Who's Jason? And I was like, oh, okay. I'm a big fan of yours.
He's a method actor then.
I'm a big fan of yours, PHL.
You know, that's like Peter Mayhew showing up at a Star Wars convention in Chewbacca cosplay.
But it was great. And, Jason was kind of like a bit of a surprise guest. Like, I didn't realize he was going to be there until I checked my Facebook at the hotel the day before. And there was a lot, like Megan Carter was there. Andrew Wheeler, who writes freelance, he was there. And Paris Alain was there. And Stephanie Lean was there. Lots of good people there. It was very, very heavy on like the comic talent as far as like Canadian comic creators. So
that sounds like it might have been the convention to be at.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Yeah.
What's your next appearance?
I don't have one.
Okay.
This is all I have slated so far.
Okay.
Well, I got tickets for Fan Expo, but that's it.
I mean, I will make an appearance at Fan Expo probably on the other side of the table.
Yeah.
But
I'm still trying to figure out my Fan Expo plans. There is a chance that I might be working with a yet-to-be-announced celebrity. I know who it is because I might be working with them. And I was talking to their agent last week, and that celebrity had just... they had just done a show in Florida with the Fan Expo of Florida. And she was telling me that although she still loves him, she's not sure if she can sit next to him for another convention for 4 days. So I'm just like,
I'll do it. Let me in for free and I'll do it.
It doesn't mean, and it would mean, my big thing is it would mean that I'd have access to the green room. And that's all I want, because I want to go. And when Michael J. Fox is sitting in the green room, I just want to go in and see him eating a sandwich and going, hey, man, how you doing?
Hey,
have a good
you're
time?
Michael J. Fox, and he'll be like, yes, I am.
It's good to see you. That's all I want to say. They just announced this week for Fan Expo, and it was something that really hit me so hard in the heart. I got quite emotional. Lucy Lawless and Renee O'Connor are going to be from Xena. Warrior Princess are going to be there. I was never a Xena fan. I never, ever watched the show. But I used to have this friend named Ralph, who was a very old man, old gentleman, and he was a bit of a mentor to me, and he was a massive Xena fan, to the point that he talked about it so much, I just wish he'd shut up. I didn't want to hear about it all anymore. Like, seriously, because I didn't understand it. And I brought Ralph to two Fan Expos back when he was well enough to go, and we went and saw the woman who played the villain in it, the blonde villain. I can't remember her name. We went and saw her, and then we went a year later and saw Ted Raimi. And we saw the panel, and then we met them, got their autographs and everything. Like, I brought him, and he was very old. He was in his, I think he was about 80 years old when we did that, and it was just such a highlight to him. And I remember him saying to me all the time, "Oh, Lucy Lawless and Renee O'Connor would never come to these, but I'd love to meet them. I wish they'd come to Toronto. I wish they'd come, but you know, they're too big, they're too famous." And to see them, that they are now, you know, Ralph's been gone now for about 3 years. He's been passed on. And when I saw that they were coming there, oh, man, it just choked me up. Like, I may have cried a little bit. I'm actually thinking of getting the photo op.
Yeah.
Just and bringing a picture of Ralph and having me holding a photo of Ralph with them. I think that would be something pretty special. And we'll just have to see how much that photo op is.
Well, I think that's it for today. It seems to be that
man, that
we're
went by
out
fast.
Of time. Well, it was a good show because we read comics.
Yeah, it's amazing
speak
what happens when we read comics.
There you go. All right, that's it for us today, and we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to the Hey Kids Comics Radio Show broadcast through the facilities of Trent Radio on 92.7 CFFF FM in Peterborough, Ontario, and available as a downloadable podcast at www.heykidscomics.ca and at www.firstcomicsnews.com. Promotional consideration for the show was provided by no one. Are you kidding me? We couldn't get advertisers if we tried. Wardrobe for our hosts was provided by Joe Nerds in Whitby, Ontario. They don't know that fact, but that is where we get 90% of our clothes from. No animals were harmed in the making of this radio show. Marty tried, but allergies won't let him get too close to Sam's cats. The views and opinions expressed by Sam are solely his own and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the rest of the hosts, as we all like the Walking Dead TV show. The Hey Kids Comics Radio Show is a Quinn Martin production and copyright Hey Kids Comico. Rebroadcasting in part or in whole of this show is forbidden, but really, who would want to anyway?